Hello and welcome to episode 55 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about solo and co-op games again. Last year we had episodes on both, and over the last year enough has changed where we want to talk about them again, so we're going to. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Giljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. Also a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh. So we're going to start the show a little serious, like real serious,
oh
I know.
Oh my God.
So last week, Hurricane Harvey came through Houston.
Yes.
And friends of ours from the Gaming and BS podcast reached out, and they wanted to get a lot of gaming podcasts together to help support Houston and everything that's going on down there right now. So I want to bring it to everyone's attention. The idea is that we're giving all our Patreon money for the month of September to Hurricane Harvey
aid,
right? Specifically, we're doing the Houston Food Bank. This is not a drive to get more patrons or anything like that. It's more or less just, you know, saying, hey, we're doing this. If you're interested in also supporting more so, we're supporting the Houston Food Bank, but there are, which is at houstonfoodbank.org, but there are a ton of charities down there, the Red Cross. You know, there's so many ways that you can kind of help out from afar.
I donated to a diaper bank.
Yes.
Apparently a lot of aid organizations don't provide diapers, so...
Yep.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And I don't know if anyone's seen like the pictures, but it's insane. It's like, you know, 4 feet to 6 feet of standing water in the streets. You know, flat bottom boats that are like running aground on the top of cars because that's how deep the flooding is down there.
Our friend Jason put up a video of him kayaking through the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's the other thing too, is there's so many people coming from all around to help with what's going on down there. Damage, like the property damage, is insane. It's amazing that, you know, it's always bad anytime anyone loses their life in a situation like this, but the death toll has actually been relatively low. The property damage and like people losing everything has been just through the roof. So there's a hashtag for this. It's hashtag gamers versus Harvey. Again, I encourage you guys just, you know, kind of check things out, even if it's just, you know, sending well wishes. Do what you can. Yep. So we're going to donate our September Patreon money. I'm also going to match that with my personal self because I think it's a good cause, and matching seems like a good way of deciding how much to give. So
if you want to, you know, hurt Chris's pocket, go ahead and sign up right now.
You could. But again, this is not a drive for Patreon money. All right, moving on to happier things. Our September contest is starting officially today. We're giving away a Kickstarter version of Massive Darkness.
All the exclusives, everything included.
All the exclusives, everything included. None of the add-ons, just the base box and all the exclusives on that. But that will be running through September 29th, which is the last Friday of September. And then we'll announce the winner on October 3rd. And that one should be a big one. Like I said, I think that's like $100 or $120 pledge on Kickstarter. But if you were to try to get all that right now, you probably wouldn't be able to. Maybe you could. If you can, let me know. I'll pick up another copy. I already have two copies. I don't need another copy. But yeah, so to enter, you're going to email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com with the subject line September giveaway. And that's all there is to it. If you are a Patreon, you're automatically entered. But if you want to email us anyway, I am always happy to receive emails. Quick reminder, GameholeCon registration is open.
Ooh.
So you can actually go on their site and sign up for a bunch of games that we'll be hosting. Just search for Tabletop Game Talk and we'll pop right up and you'll see all kinds of games we'll be hosting. I broke the Kickstarter drought. I mean, to be honest, there weren't a lot of good Kickstarters the past couple of weeks. This one, though, looks pretty cool. It's called Alexandria, which is the Library of. This game is based on, you build up the library, and then it's based on the burning down of the library. It's a two to four player, fight against each other type of game. I'm not 100% sure why you're trying to burn it down, but I know that there are four people and you're trying to burn it down. Apparently there's a little bit of take that in the game, so if you don't like, you know, burning other people's stuff and putting a hitch in their plans, then you might not like this game. But it looks amazing. There's tons of custom components. It's only about $45. There's about 3 weeks left on it. They've already funded. It's worth checking out. The art is really fun, and I'm looking forward to this one. So, and I'm happy that I'm kickstarting games again.
Woo.
All right, Josh, take us to the next segment.
Well, yes, let's get some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. And the first one is from Ryan Stapleton. He says, "Hey, hello all."
That's exactly.
Do you want to try that again?
Hello all. I wanted to say thank you for doing your podcast. I recently added it to one of my top commuting podcasts. You all have some good chemistry, and it made me come to watch my first podcast at Gen Con, and I was very entertained. Keep doing what you do. Thank you for the games at the show. It was a great gesture by you all. Thought I would share that I have played it, paid it forward for some by giving a few games to interested friends.
Yep. So thanks, Ryan. It was nice meeting you at Gen Con as well.
So nice.
Yep. In fact, we had a great time. That show was awesome. We met a ton of new people and a few people that were new. We talked about that all last week and the week before that and the week before that, I'm sure. But I like this idea of, you know, something we've been talking about, getting rid of games, when games should replace other games. You know, if I have two games that are the same, which one do I keep? I really like this idea of just giving games to friends who don't have this big a board game collection. It's like, hey, take this. I've had, I had a stack of games, like really high and really long, and I still have a few here and there, but I've had a number of friends come over and they're like, why are these on the floor over here? It's like, oh, I'm giving them away. I'm like, if you see something you want, go ahead and take it. And everybody's walking out with a game now. So, like, all right, I'm building other people's collection, and then they'll have to come back and play more games with me.
I think we need to get you, like, a custom stamp that you can stamp in the lid of the box so people know where it came from.
Once owned by Chris.
Of Tabletop Game Talk. Find our podcast here.
I like it.
I want to know, maybe we could put, like, an email in there, like, how far do the games get? Email us when you get the game.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have a whole map and everything.
Yep.
That would be fun.
Yep. We also got a number of different, not a number, but a couple people have talked to me about our last episode. And I just want to say those people are right. Last episode, we talked about a ton of different things in super, super brief snippets. This episode, we're focusing on one of those, which is like the solo and co-op. So last episode, we were talking about gaming trends. Well, it turns out there's a ton of gaming trends.
And it's really hard to talk about them all in 30 minutes.
Yep. So what we're going to do is a lot of those, we're going to see, we're going to pull those into subjects over the next, you know, 4 to 8 weeks, because a lot of them have just plenty to talk about all by themselves. I made the mistake of saying solo and co-op is the only one we need to do that with, but
we need to put some meat on those bones we threw out there.
So we will be talking about lots of different things. We'll be talking in depth about card and dice games, specific card games and dice games, and what we like and don't like about when they're converting. We'll be talking about technology with games, whether that be apps or whatever, like little electronic pens or things like that, all the way to what future technology, AR and VR, and how that might work. And we want to really kind of get in depth on those topics. So we promise we will make up for last episode and give you so much good in-depth stuff. You're going to be like,
so much more of our own insight and experience in the games, instead of just like throwing out a scattershot of like, these are trends.
Yeah. So, and we're looking forward to it.
If you have any that you specifically want us to talk more about, email us. Let us know what you want to hear the most about.
Yep. Yeah. What trends are you most interested in us diving into? All right, Kitty.
So we're going to go to a quick question from one of our listeners. This won't fill an entire show topic, but we think it's interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Jared. Being a graphic designer, I love all the artwork that goes into a game, but I also get really excited about how games are packaged when it's done well. What is your favorite game packaging you've seen? His favorite is Jamaica, he says. The treasure chest look is really cool, and goes on to talk about some issues with the rule book, though, that it can be a little complicated.
Yeah. Well, the rule book is a treasure map.
Which is really cool, but not necessarily user-friendly.
Yeah. I think an easy one for this one is Mechs versus Minions. Like, right off the bat, like, that box is huge. It looks like a metal chest on the outside. You open it up. It's multiple trays with clear covers. Everything in there is, like, super high-end awesome. So I have to mention Mechs versus Minions, but there are a bunch of other ones.
Well, there was one that we saw at one of the conventions, and I forget the name of it, but basically, like, there was, like, these big sort of miniature things, and the whole game was inside of it, but you also play with the miniatures. Yep. Do you remember the name of that?
So it's not actually out yet. It's right. Going to be kickstarted. I want to say it was, like, Hexa something.
Yeah.
As soon as that's on Kickstarter, you will know. But what these are is, like, large-headed miniatures, and you've opened up their heads, and inside of it are hex cards that give you the actions and a little measuring stick. So it's a tabletop miniature game where each miniature has all of the components used to play that miniature in its head. And I super apologize for not knowing the name of this. I'll put it in the show notes. I'm gonna actually write this down to note it, but and I might remember it before the end of the episode. But you are right, that packaging is really, really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was even more potential as well, because I thought the miniatures were really good, but they could become even better than their look is like a 7, and I think they could take that to a 10 at some point as well. But the whole concept, I was really like, oh, this is a cool way and a new thing.
Yeah.
I can't think of any packaging that I particularly like, but I know a style of packaging that I really don't like. Mm. And that is when it is so busy on the outside of the box. There's lots of either figures running around or lots of colors and splashiness. It just is so distracting to me that I don't even want to open the box. I'm like, God, if that's what the outside of the box looks like, I can't even imagine what the mess is on the inside of this box.
See, I'm the exact opposite. The more, like, we're looking at the Arcadia Quest box right now. Which is all of that, like all these figures and fightings and monsters and everything. I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh my God, there's so much in that box. I must open it.
And I'm looking at it next to Time Stories, and I'm like, oh, look at that clean lines of Time Stories. That white box with just a little hint of like something cool is in here. I like it.
Josh, do you have any preference in game boxes?
I'm with Kitty. I've got to be honest. The minimal look is really cool. It's just like sleek and, you know, it's just we're in the iPhone generation, man. Like, oh, clean lines and, you know, aesthetics. Like, I don't want to put a case on my phone.
Elysium has a cool one with just like the one figure on the side. I'm looking at the sides of boxes, so I don't know what the top of that one looks like. But
yeah, I don't know. I kind of like the flashy art. Now, I will say, the thing that disappoints me is if the art is really flashy and colorful and a lot of things going on the outside of the box and I open it up and there's really nothing in there, that can be counter. I can like, oh, I thought this game was going to be like super cool and lots of fun bits and stuff, but now I'm disappointed from it. Cool Mini or Not does do a fantastic job packaging their stuff as well. You open it up.
You know what you're getting in that box, looking at the box. But sometimes I'm like, ugh, my eyes are bleeding.
Yep.
Personal preference.
Yeah. Flatline, which we will talk about a little bit later, is a co-op game. This, when I opened up this, I'm like, oh, this is cool. The board fits together like a puzzle piece. And when you lay everything out, it has this like really...
it's very geometric.
Yeah, looking. Well, it's futuristic. Geometric, I guess.
It's very clean lines, very...
Yeah.
Everything has a place, and everything's place is clear. I don't know what you're going for. But
I thought... I'm just talking about presentation. I open it up, there's all these dice. Like, there's 8 dice of 5 different colors, and they're all custom dice. The board fits together. There's tons of, like, tiles. There's no cards. Everything is cardboard stock. So it just feels like a nice, heavy game that I want to keep pulling out. And then Santorini is another one where...
Oh, yeah.
You know, the box is clean, so you like the clean art.
I do.
It also, I like the fact that there's enough art on there that makes me want to open it up. And then you open it up and there's all these like really cool plastic 3-dimensional pieces. You could have done that with cardboard pieces, no problem. But they went the extra mile and it's like, it's a piece of art at when you're done finishing, when you finish every single game.
Yeah, I completely agree on that one.
So, all right, this topic is, we're going to talk a lot about it. So I say we should probably just jump right into it. What do you say?
Go for it.
All right.
In this episode, we're talking about solo and co-op games. How has the last year changed these types of games? Where do they overlap? And why do they seem to be growing in popularity? This should be a fun one.
Yeah. So solo and co-op. And we're putting this together because one of the questions I want to answer, and I don't want to start with it, I just want to put it in everyone's mind, is where is the line between a solo and a co-op game? Now, that said, that makes it sound like I'm dissing either solo or co-ops or one or the other, but I'm really not. Kitty, Spencer, and I had like a marathon yesterday of co-op games.
I would say it like was over 2 days because we played Thursday or Friday, and then we took a day off, and then we played like all day Sunday.
Yep. So we played a bunch of different ones, and we enjoyed all of them, I think.
Yeah. To different degrees. And in different ways. But we did. I don't think there was a single game that we played that I'd be like, nah, I don't want to play again.
Right. So Time Stories was the first one.
Which I loved. So good. We're just going to make Josh jealous about not playing Time Stories with us now for the next half hour.
You guys have been gushing about it even before we start the podcast. I'm intrigued.
Now, and I've been saying for quite some time, I wanted to get Time Stories to the table. I wanted to play it. I did not know how this game played. I did not know enough about this game. I think that people are scared to say anything about it because they're going to feel like they're going to spoil it.
So I'm going to talk about the mechanics of the game without talking about either of the scenarios we played.
Right.
So the way this game works is you are time travelers and you go back to a scenario where you have to figure out something. Now, we played the first scenario comes in the box. It's the introduction one. And then we played the Marcy case. The Marcy case. And they're completely different feels. But the things that are the same is you are given so much time to go back and try to solve a mystery. And you start in a receptacle body, which is somebody who lives in the time. And you take over their consciousness and you use them to fulfill this mission. So you go through, but you only have so much time to be there. And it takes time to do things like fight someone, search for information, try to coerce someone into giving you something. Move from one location to another. All this kind of stuff costs you time, but you're learning the information that you will know next time. So there are a couple locations you can go to where it's literally just a waste of time. It is spend this much time, now you're like slowed down and you've got to go do another thing and you're like, ah! But when you run out of time, if you didn't finish the mission, you go back to the beginning and you do another run of the same mystery. And you do that until you succeed, basically.
Kind of sounds like, you know, you're a looper or something and you're looping through
the same
things.
It reminds me of kind of Groundhog's Day or The Edge of Tomorrow.
Yep.
A lot like The Edge of Tomorrow where, you know, you die, you start again and you learn and you know, oh, I need to roll under the truck at this time or the guy's going to pop out to my left. If I start the helicopter, they're going to get me, you know, like so you know not to make those mistakes again. And you know some of the information, you can just like kind of run forward through the run and get to the end without having to stop and do all the little things again.
Yep. And one of the fun parts was because this is not a spoiler because after you play the first one, you know, you get a score based on how few runs you make it before you get through. So there's a number of things that go into the score and each scenario is a little bit different.
Gotcha.
It took us 3 runs to beat the first one. It took us 3 runs to beat the second one. But once we got to the third run, like we knew everything we were going to do. We're going to this, and this. So the first playthrough probably took us about an hour or so to get through before we failed. The last one was more like 25 minutes.
Wow.
Because we're like, boom, here, you do this. I go here, I do this. And that part was fun. It's like, okay, well, we're just kind of going through the motions right now because we know the solution.
How can we maximize our time?
Right.
What's our best usage here? Like, I'm going to go, all right, my skill matches up with this mission. So I'm going to go do this while you do this. And we're going to use this one time to do four things that we need to get done. And it's just really fun.
Yeah. So I highly recommend Time Stories. One of the things that the pieces that people may not like about it, the base box is not cheap. And you have to own it. I think the base game is like $50. You can probably get it, you know, for 40 or so online. And it gives you one scenario that you can play, and it's probably going to take you between 2 and 3 hours to finish it. And then you're done. You wouldn't ever play that again. So you just spend $40 for a 3-hour entertainment. Personally, I don't think that's necessarily terrible. There are other ways to spend $40 right. for less entertainment. But I understand on a board game perspective, that's tricky. Each expansion runs about $35. Again, you can probably get it for $30, $25 online, but that expansion is the same thing. I still think it's worth it.
So these scenarios, though, are completely replayable. Not necessarily by you, but if you are finished with not the base game, you need to keep the base game, but any of the expansions you've played through are totally resellable because you're not destroying cards, you're not cutting anything up, you're just at most messing up the order of the deck.
Yep, which you can put back in order because all the cards are numbered.
Yeah, so, without even spoiling. You just have to make sure that everything's face down and you can put the deck together without spoiling it for yourself.
Yep, so I'd say if you're cost conscious on this one, invest in the base game and then look for, you know, for trade or sale of the expansions.
Definitely.
Because you're not going to lose anything. It's just a deck of cards. Well, it depends on the expansion. It could be 2 to 3 decks of cards. I haven't opened up all the boxes, so I don't know if there's other stuff in there, but
there might be more bits.
Yeah. Everything is resettable. There's nothing that's destructive in it.
Yes.
The only reason you can't replay it is because you already know the solution.
There's a part of me, though, that's a maximizer that's like, now that I know, I want to start at the beginning of the first run and see how fast I can do it, how efficiently I can solve these.
All right. So now let's take a look at the aspects of this co-op. It's a 2 to 4 player game. Do we think it has to be 2-player or could you play this solo?
I think with this one, it does have to be 2-player because there are certain things you don't share with each other. The way the cards work, when you go to a location card, the only person who sees it is the person standing on that location card. And some of them you do flip over, and sometimes people run into your location to help you with a fight or something. But some of them are purely informational, and you're the only one who's going to look at that card, and you paraphrase the information to share with the group.
So is that just a way of making it a 2-player game? Because if you just got rid of that rule where all information was open, you could just play 2 characters and play it solo. And I don't even know that you would lose much besides, and this is a blanket for all of this, you would lose the ability to share the story with someone else, which I think is a very important thing. But if you were by yourself, I think you could play Time Stories solo. The only thing you would be quote unquote cheating on is you'd have perfect information shared across the players.
I think it would also be really tempting for me because you do have like items go to one player, not to the group. It would be real easy for me to by myself just like, oh, yeah, I had the keys or whatever it is.
Actually, that's a really good segue into a solo question. When you're playing a game solo, how likely are you to fudge the rules versus when you're playing with someone else, they kind of keep you honest?
Well, see, that's hard for me. I think the only solo games I've played is app form, so I'm not able to like cheat basically in that arena.
Wait, you've never played solitaire, like the deck of cards?
Not with the cards, no, only on the computer.
Interesting.
Yes.
I totally cheat. It's not fun. Like, so with all of these, I mean, maybe the Time Stories, I wouldn't be as tempted because you can go back and do it again. But with solitaire, You just get to a point where like, okay, I lost. I don't feel like reshuffling the deck. I know if I take this top card and put it on the bottom, I can just keep going forward.
Yeah.
And I know in my heart I didn't actually win. I know I lost this one. But the fun is keep playing.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And I think I would be the same. I just realized it's not a game, but it feels like a game. Those choose your own adventure books. Yep. I would always cheat. I'd have all the corners folded
four
and my fingers.
And pages.
Yes, yeah. Four fingers. Because I was like, I'm not going right back to the beginning. I read all that bit. It's just, you know, it's just effort.
Yeah.
And I think that's, to me, when I'm playing a solo game, I have to force myself to follow the rules. And I used to be like, whatever, I'll fudge this rule. I don't want to lose this die roll. If I do this, it's like, I'm going to lose. Now I kind of say it's more fun when I do follow the rules and I do have setbacks and there are permanent decisions to be made, because then I'm like, okay, this happened. Now I have to deal with the consequences. It feels more like a game than just a solo activity.
Right.
I guess I only do it in those situations where I tell, like, I've lost, but if I do one thing, I can keep going. If it's like, I'm going to give myself better stats for this, or, oh, I'm just going to change this one die roll to give myself a better advantage, I don't do that. But if it's, I don't want to reset the game, I want to keep playing from this point, yeah. It's like, you know,
it's like a,
it's like a
reset.
Video. It's yeah. like a video mm-hmm. game. Yeah, you just start where you were.
All right. Well, the next game we played, and these might be coming out of order, is Deadline. Deadline is a new game from, we should know
WizKids?
Is it WizKids? Oh, yeah, it's WizKids.
Yeah.
It is kind of a 1920s detective stories.
I was going to say 40s.
1940s detective?
20s to 40s.
Somewhere
classic detective.
Classic detective, Dick Tracy, that kind of
this
stuff.
This broad came into my office.
It's
she was smoking
exactly
hot.
Like that.
And it reads like that. The stories read great. Like that. So there's 20-some cases in the box.
I thought it was 12.
No.
It's 20?
Yeah.
Okay, we keep going back and forth on that.
There's a ton. But there's so, and the cases are kind of like in the same way of time stories. Once you've played through them, you will not necessarily want to play it again because you'll have all the information. You could potentially play it again after a few months or a year or so where you don't remember everything. Then you go through, but you're going through, there's what they call clues, which are basically locations or people you can talk to or something along those lines. There's a mechanic to unlock a clue. Now, the mechanic itself is relatively, we figured it was kind of like a little ho-hum-ish.
It's pretty straightforward puzzle matching icons. You play lead cards or what they're called to get the right symbols to open the clue.
Yeah. So a clue might have a shot glass of, we call it whiskey, a pack of cigarettes, two hats and a gun. And a lead card could have two or three icons on it. So one person would play a lead card, and then the next person would have to play the lead card on their lead card on that one, but the icons have to match up. So if I play something that has a hat, a space, and a gun, Kitty could play something with a gun, a cigarette, and another cigarette or whatever, as long as the two guns lined up and they didn't interfere with anything else. So that mechanic never really posed a problem to us all that much. And when we were done, it's like we were focusing so much on the mechanic that this cool story that was unfolding in front of us, we weren't really paying as much attention to that.
I also feel like, not trying to do spoilers here, so being very general, but we did the clues out of order a bit. So I felt like we kind of solved the mystery before we got like half the information.
Before we got the story.
Yeah. So we were like, oh, well, we know who did it. This clue was very obvious who did it. But it's because we solved like the seventh clue before we solved clues 2, 4, 5, 6. Right.
And is that how the game's meant to be played? It wasn't like you making a mistake.
No.
No, totally, it's meant to. You right. can choose yeah. the clues whatever order you want to go in. And some of them, like the last, like the highest number clue was not as important to the
overall
arcing mystery, but it was still a lot of story. It was fun to have. Yeah. And the way that you score the game is they give you these case questions. And the questions don't necessarily is like, who's the murderer? You should have that information. That is one of the questions. But there's also questions about like, how did this happen? Who was this person? Was this person, you know, in the right place or whatever.
Yeah. Then you'll have bonus questions.
Yeah. And how many of the questions you get is how much of the, how many points or what level of investigator you become.
Yeah. So in the end, it's like you've revealed the story. Can you answer all these questions? If you do, great. You're a great investigator. If you don't, all right, you didn't do all that great.
Okay.
But I think what we were doing and the reason we jumped ahead in the clues logically versus following the story is we were paying more attention to what symbols do we have in our hands that can solve the clues on the table. And we were picking the clues based on that versus picking the clues based on where that was or whether or not that was the most interesting thing to do.
Right. Which, and that's the logical thing, right?
Definitely. Right. It's the strategy I would still use going forward. It just so happened, I think, that the cards we had in our hand gave us some of the key components before others.
Yeah. Right. But I think once we got to the end of it, I figured it out. I'm like, oh, if I was to just look at the story first, this is a much more interesting game because the stories are really cool.
They're fun little mystery. It's really just a short story in a deck of cards.
Yep.
Very choose your own adventure, but there's only one adventure.
Right. But what the order you reveal them changes. And if you can't unlock a clue, for some reason you don't have the right symbols or something, that clue is immediately removed and you never have access to that bit of the story.
Wow.
So there might be a piece of information you can never get to. Now, we played an easy one. We played it on intro level. So it was like, basically we walked right through it. But there's a lot of potential here. And I'm actually really looking forward to playing the other games. So that's Deadline by WizKids.
Yep.
That one, I don't know that you could play it solo and still follow the rules all that much, unless you were playing two characters with open hand. But I again, it's a 2-4 player.
There could be a solo variant created, but it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, you have to play at least two characters. Typically, your hand is closed, and there's some information you're not supposed to share, which is a common theme in making co-op games non-alpha player and non-soloable. But this game, if you played it open hand, again, you could play it solo. And the reason I mention it is not so much to say I'm dissing on this game. It's because I think if you were a solo player, co-op games are something that you can look at as games that you could potentially convert to a solo game. Dead of Winter, where you have a hidden traitor mechanic, it is not a soloable game. It wouldn't make sense. Mini games, though, with minor tweaks, you could make them solo games. And that's kind of what I'm pointing out here.
And I think more and more designers, we talked about this a little bit last week, are actually doing that. They're seeing people find value in these solo play games, and they're adding their own rules, how they think it should go, which is great. I love that.
Yep. So the next one we played was Professor Evil and the Citadel of Time.
Love that name.
I really enjoyed this game.
I feel like there's a butt coming.
Well,
just look at your face.
So I really enjoyed this game. I want to see what Kitty thought about it, though.
I really liked the game. I thought it was really fun to play. Like, visually, it gave me a bit of a headache. There are so many kind of cartoons and backgrounds and vibrant colors, and there's switches everywhere and treasures everywhere, and it's like a clue board almost, except instead of all of the yellow squares, it's beautiful illustrations and I can't see what's happening. Yeah. There were a lot of times.
Yeah, vivid popping illustrations. So the way Professor Evil, the Citadel of Time, and the Citadel of Time works is you all play a particular character and you have 6 action cards and you're going to draw 2 of those every turn, which you can then use one of those actions. These action cards are very specific to what your character's abilities are. So I was playing a character who's very good at moving around, so they oftentimes gave me moving around abilities. Kitty, you were playing a character...
I had kind of 2 powers where I could... Most of the time I had a choice to unlock a bunch of stuff or to manipulate time somehow.
Yeah, so she was like being able to pick locks and make up for lost time. Besides that, you have 3 basic actions. You can, you have 3 action points that you can spend, and you can use that to move one space from one room to another. You can use it to unlock or lock a door, and you can use it to turn a switch on or off. And that's the whole
Also point. To collect a treasure.
Oh, and also to collect the treasure. So there are 3 treasures on the board, and each treasure requires a certain type of switches, all of those to be off. So you're moving around the board trying to turn off all these switches so you can open up the essentially unlock the area around that treasure. Then someone gets in there and they capture a treasure. Meanwhile, Professor Evil is walking around his laboratory, Citadel of Time, and anytime he walks through a door and it's not locked, he's like, what's wrong with this? This door should be locked. So he locks the door. If he goes into a room that has a switch off, he's like, this switch should be on. So he turns the switch on. And if he runs into a room that you're in, you like have to run and hide, and you run out of the mansion and have to sneak back in later.
Can you be caught at all?
Being caught is essentially kicked out.
Right.
So you can't be killed at all.
Okay.
But he's attempting to save four treasures before you can steal four treasures or recover. You're not trying to steal. You're trying to recover four treasures. And the way he moves around is you roll these three dice, which tells you what his AI is.
I thought it worked pretty well.
It really did work very well.
I thought all of the mechanics of the game worked really well. I thought it was fun. It was challenging, but achievable. We did pretty well, but I could see how with a little bad luck, we could have totally failed. I really liked there's like a clock in the middle of the board that has where the time is and then where the treasures will expire, and you can move time forward one, two, or three steps. Just one, or two. Three steps is only in time stories. Time traveled out. I can't even think anymore.
Citadel of Time is not a time travel game.
Manipulation.
More time manipulation.
So, because my character could move treasures forward or backward to either buy more time for us to recover the treasure, or to, we're not going to get this treasure anyway, so I could get more actions. Yep.
And this basically is a ticking clock. And if ever that clock hits a particular treasure icon, that's when the professor steals that treasure, and now it's permanently locked away.
And do those two elements, the sort of ticking clock and the professor running around doing stuff, did you feel the sort of the tension and the pressure of like, or were you like, oh, okay, you know, we're running out of time, or, you know?
I think I felt a little bit of pressure. It's the unpredictable nature of it. You never know what the professor's going to do. He can stand still. He's already where he's going to be. He doesn't move at all. He can move one, two, or three steps, and maybe that's good or bad depending on the direction he moves. Right. He could teleport into a room with a treasure and like lock all the doors and turn the switches all on, but maybe that doesn't matter because you don't care about that treasure. So all of these things that he could do, you're just kind of like hoping he doesn't.
Right.
And you're trying to mitigate the randomness. Like, well, we'll do this, this, and this just in case he does this or this.
Okay.
So
it was fun. I did not feel the pressure as much. I felt like, I don't know if we just got lucky, but I felt like pretty good about our chances of winning the whole time.
Yeah. It seemed like it was a little bit easy. There was a few things you can do to make it more difficult, but the basic game out of the box, it feels a little easy, but we also got lucky by like four rolls in a row. He just teleported the same room he was already in and just stood still.
And we just let him. We're like, all right, that treasure is yours. You just hang out there.
Yep.
We'll sneak around the rest of the house.
Now, this game could definitely be a solo game.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Again, because all the information in this game is open. In fact, the rules say you draw your two action cards that go with your character. You read them out loud to everyone on the board, and then you decide what to do.
It definitely feels like it could be a solo game. It felt like very easily alpha playered. There were a few moments where if I did not have as much backbone, Chris would have just played the game by himself.
Well,
Spencer has one too.
Yeah.
But yeah, we had some moments where I'm like, no, we should be doing this. And Chris is like, but if we do this, and, you know, back and forth. And they were both good moves.
Yeah. I think Kitty said something earlier. Oh, what was it? We don't have to worry about alpha players because we're all alpha players.
That's true.
So
that's true.
We'll just argue with each other until, like, okay, fine, this is what we're going to do.
No one's going to be steamrolled.
Yeah.
But that can be tough for people who don't enjoy conflict in gaming very much. Yep. Even if you know what is the best move, you can alpha player. If you're not an assertive person, you don't like the conflict, you're just going to let the person who's loudest, you know, yeah, you go ahead, you do your thing then.
Yeah. And I guess you could have like a house rule essentially says nobody else can talk when it's your turn. You just have to do your thing.
That's not fun, though.
But then you're not a co-op anymore.
No.
Right? It's a different kind of game. You're trying to do this, like, you know, mental, oh, I'm trying to do this, and hopefully you understand what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
As opposed to working together to solve the problem.
And a lot of times I was, you know, not seeing something that Spencer or Chris could be like, point out, like, we should just do this. And then, like, as soon as they say it, I'm like, of course that's what we should
do. And then you
doing.
Genuinely want to do that. It's not like, oh, you know, you made the decision for me, damn you. You're like, oh, no, I want to do that. That's
because
our optimal move.
Sometimes I do it for them, too. You know, it's not like, it's a cooperative game. We're all working together. We're collaborating. It's not, you know, Chris and Spencer tell Kitty what to do game. You know, that's not fun.
Yeah.
I wouldn't participate in that.
So the next thing I want to talk about is Flatline. Talked about it a little bit at the top of the show.
Yep.
So Flatline is a real, I want to say real time. They call it a real time. It's really not, but it introduces another mechanic that reduces alpha playerism. That's the word, I think. So the way
it is now.
The way Flatline works is you're thematically on a ship in the medical bay and patients come in. Now these patients are shaped like, sort of like cardboard, they're cardboard pieces. They're really quite big, but they're kind of more like pods. So they don't look like people or anything like that. But a patient will have a number of things you have to do to cure that patient. And it can be anywhere from like 4 to 8 different things. The way you do that is you roll dice, and all the dice have different symbols on them. And each patient, the thing you have to do, you have to have a certain number of symbols. So maybe you need 3 Band-Aid symbols, which are blue symbols. And if you put the 3 dice that have the Band-Aid symbol on it, then that row is complete. The way the co-op of this works, though, is there is actually a discussion phase. So there's some board maintenance stuff that goes on. And then you all discuss, like, okay, I think we should focus on this patient here. Let's do that. Also, we're running low on time, so let's see if we can't, you know, make the engine, repair the engine as well, because you can repair the engine twice. It gives you a little bit more time. Or I think it's the reactor. But in any case, and then so you kind of have this general plan that you're discussing, and then you hit the timer, and it's a 1-minute timer, and you roll the dice, and you have 1 minute to work together to put the dice where you're supposed to, where you want them to go. It's never going to work out for what you planned.
Yeah.
So you always have to kind of negotiate, well, we should go here, and you go there, you go to there.
There's a lot of randomness. So you can't make a plan going in like, oh, we're going to get this, because you don't know what you're going to roll.
Exactly. So there's a little bit of debate there. And what I think may actually happen, now there's a lot going on. I played this 2 players with Sydney. With 2 players, you can still look at both dice pools and in your head play out everything. And that's what we were essentially doing.
But it plays up to 4.
It plays up to 5. It
plays up to 5?
Yep.
Oh, man.
So
that would be very chaotic.
Yes. Now, the trick is, if you put your dice someplace and say you have 1 die that can contribute to something and nobody else sees that you put that there and they don't complete that row, that die is lost. You just get it back at the end and it doesn't actually help you at all. So you still have to communicate with each other, get everything out there. I think with 5 players, there'd be a lot more chaos. It might even be more fun because of the more chaos.
It reminds me of Space Team.
It's a little bit Space Team-ish. Space Team, if you don't know, is an app where you kind of yell at each other and you're trying to...
So much fun.
It's a lot of fun.
But there's a lot of yelling, like, flip the DNA family kind of stuff. But yeah, I think with 5 players, you really have to be just kind of like, I'm making everyone aware of what I'm doing all the time so that, you know, everyone is kind of on the same page. And you really have to look at the board as you do what you're doing to see what everyone else is doing.
Yep. Yeah, and there's cards in there where, like, missions that you have to address, and if you don't, then you get fails. If you get 4 fails, the game's over. 3, actually, if it's more players. There's some other cards that are sometimes problems, sometimes not. If you do complete the missions, you get bonuses and things like that. So there's a lot going on. It's a very simple game. It is a 1-to-5-player game. So you could play this solo. I believe when you play solo, you play with 2 sets of dice, if I remember correctly. But that would be fine. It just gives you more dice to kind of manage with it. It's fun. Like I said, there's a real-time element into it because of the timer. Mechs vs. Minion does this as well, as a co-op game where when you're making decisions, they put you on a timer. Because if you're on a timer, it's harder for one person to analyze everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting. XCOM does the same thing. You're on a timer during the decision phases. So no one person can really understand everything that's going on the board. It's totally valid. Also, it's completely unnecessary. If you wanted to remove the timer, that would be fine if you didn't like that time pressure. And it would just go back to a straight co-op where you have all the information available to you and you guys can decide where everything goes.
But isn't that like what board games are about? You know, these rules are constraining you so that you're forced into certain situations. You know, like, what are you doing, Chris? You can't take the timer out.
I honestly, in this game, I agree with you. We ran out of time at one point where we hadn't placed our dice. And well, we placed some of them, but we had like five in front of us still. And we're like, well, we ran out of time, you know, and we're like, all right, we got to get better at that next time.
Yeah, it makes it interesting.
So I don't suggest taking out the timer.
Right, right. But it's possible and you can still play the game.
Yeah. And we played the first round without the timer because that's an easier way to learn. Mm. When I teach Mechs versus Minions, I never put the timer on the first couple rounds.
That makes sense.
Because it's easier to learn when you can describe why you might make certain actions.
Right.
I'm going to talk about one of my favorite solo games.
Wait, let me say the name of this game we just did. Flatline. Flatline by WizKids. That's the game we just talked about. No, Flatline, that's not by WizKids.
It's not.
Yeah.
Deadline was WizKids.
Yeah, Deadline's WizKids. Flatline is just
well, these lines.
We'll
yeah,
get,
it's another
we'll
dead ones, yeah. Flat ones.
But it's a fun game. It's not bad and lots of dice, well produced. Like it.
So since we're talking about timers, I'm going to throw out an old school fun game that I like to solo, Perfection.
Oh, okay. All right.
Never even still heard really of this fun. Game.
It's a solo dexterity game where you have like it's a red box with like a blue tray in the middle and you push the tray down and you have a bunch of yellow pieces and a 60-second timer and you are matching the yellow pieces into their slots and you have to get them all in before the timer goes off or the tray pops out and all the pieces go flying.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's so much fun. And when I was like maybe 9 or 10, I would sit and like maximize my time, like try to get the best score I could. Like I could do it in 45 seconds, you know.
It's a super annoying game if someone else is playing it in the room you're sitting in.
Yeah.
Because it's like an egg timer, so it's tick, 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 tick. And then when it explodes, it's like, bang, and then everything flies all over the place.
Also, the pieces are very sharp if you step on them.
Yes. It's a hazard. Not for children 3 years or younger.
No, no, no.
Let's talk about escape rooms.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
I tried an escape room game this week with my sister and her fiance and Spencer. And this might have been one of those things where I'm pregnant and I can't drink. And everyone else was like a drink and a half in. And I was like, all right, we're going to do this thing. And everyone else is like, and I just made them do it because this is how I have fun now.
Wait, we're gonna do this thing as in the escape room?
Yeah.
They weren't in the mood for the escape room.
Eve, my sister, was totally on board with it, totally wanted to do it, and I think Spencer and Jesse were just humoring us. And after we solved the first clue, like maybe halfway, they were just like, oh, we're going to go play Moncala in the corner. So me and Eve were just like imagining being in an actual room while Spencer and Jesse are just sitting there like playing a different game.
See, but for some reason, I thought you meant an actual physical escape room.
No, we were doing one of the boxes. The boxes. So this is Exit is the brand of escape room. We did the Pharaoh's Tomb. We had a really hard time with it. I don't know if we just weren't in the right mind frame, but some of these clues were very abstract. Some of them were really hard to figure out. Like, you needed to make a lot of leaps that we weren't doing. And some of them, we followed the instructions letter by letter, and we were coming up with different answers. And we're like, what is wrong with us that we can't do this? Like, we're looking at the solution card. Like, I don't know. And after an hour and a half, we were just like, I'm over this and gave up.
So I've had different experiences. Mostly positive experiences. I played another Exit one. I want to say, I don't remember the title of it, but it's like
a laboratory.
I think it might have been the laboratory. Yeah. Yes. And we actually enjoyed it quite a bit. When you first start these, especially if it's your first escape room in a box,
yeah,
you're not really sure what to expect or what your goal is. And we had the same problem with Time Stories and the same problem with Deadline, where we weren't really sure what the goal was. Like, where are we, what are we trying to get to? It's part of the story, and that's why it's not just kind of laid out for you. But once you've played through one, you have a better understanding of like, oh, I get where I'm going to be going with this, which makes it a bit easier. So we really enjoyed it. I played it just two players again. Sydney and I played through one. And then we had another one, which is actually, I think, Escape Room in a Box is what it's called. This one's cool. It has like a digital timer. It needs batteries. You have keys that you have to put in the right order. And when you like put all the keys in, you push down and leave, gives you a buzz or a bing as if, you know, if you failed or not. And there's a lot really, there's like four escape rooms in that box that you get to play. The exit series is once, and you only get to play it once. It's like a $15 game, one playthrough, and it's done.
And you destroy it.
And you destroy it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Michael actually mentioned like escape rooms for last week that this is probably a pretty big trend. We're seeing a ton of them the last year, and it won the Kinderspiel last year for. Like, I don't remember which one, but one of the escape room games won the Kinderspiel for best game.
Wait, what's the Kinderspiel?
It's a German, it's basically the, Spiel des Jahres. Kinderspiel is, I believe, is the younger version.
He's just
version.
Spouting
I
German know this. At us, yeah. isn't he? It is. It doesn't make sense.
Essentially, Josh,
anymore.
It's just the Kinderspiel des Jahres. Of course. You should have said that first.
It is a German gaming award, but it's a big deal.
Oh, it's like the sort of the Sundance's best film or whatever, or board games in Germany.
Yes.
Right.
And I should have more information when I mention these things. I mentioned it in passing so that the readers can, or listeners, hopefully you're not reading this, you might be, I don't know, can do the research to find out. Don't ask me how to spell German. I don't know.
Before we move on, I just had a quick question. So you said you destroy the game. How do you destroy the game? I want the visual. Or is that giving things away?
You actually take scissors and cut things up.
Oh.
Sometimes you tear stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't had to burn anything yet, but I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I don't know how that would be that different from cutting out with scissors. But yeah.
More dramatic.
To solve the clue, you can do it without scissors, it said, for mine. But it made it so much easier. It's usually visualizing something, you can put it into a space to see how it works.
Right.
Yeah. And you could do that visualization without cutting it out, but it makes it so much easier.
Right.
So escape rooms, completely soloable.
Oh, definitely. And I think they are branded as 1 to 6.
And honestly, the more people you have, probably the more difficult it gets, especially for the exit series, because you start out with like a little booklet.
Yes.
And there can only be so many people around the table at once.
Which Spencer and Jesse were kind of like, you two were huddled over this book and we couldn't really see what was going on. So, you know.
Yeah. I think the exit series, at least the ones that I've known of so far, are better two-player or one-player games. Probably two players, because it is more fun to go through it with somebody else. Yeah. And they can get you unstuck if your mind gets stuck.
I totally got stumped. If I hadn't had Eve there to help me out, I would have just solved one clue and then like cried myself to sleep.
Yeah. Now, most of these games do have a hint mechanic, and that eventually will give you the answer. Apparently, they still didn't understand the answer once they got the answer, but
that was just the one clue. And I think it was just at that point, like that was the last one we were trying to do and we were just like tired. But no, I think we were too hesitant to use the hint mechanic at first. We were like, no, we're gonna get the better score.
We're smart people. We don't need hints.
If we had used the hint on the first couple, we would have done so much better solving the next few, because it shows you not just how to solve that one, it shows you kind of like the steps you need to do to solve all of them.
Yeah, right.
It gives you the mindset of the riddles.
Yeah. Right. And it kind of leads you down the path of like thinking the right way, because it is kind of a specific way of solving riddles and puzzles.
Yeah. So we got a decent amount of input on this too. One of the things, and we're probably going to gloss over some of these, but one of my favorite quotes was from Christy. And talking about the alpha player syndrome, anytime we talk about co-op games, you always have to talk about the alpha player. And there are ways of solving the alpha player. And
should we quickly define alpha player? We've been throwing that term out, yeah. But if you're a new listener.
So alpha player essentially is if you have a board game, a cooperative game, and all the information is present and everyone can see it. The alpha player is the person saying we should do X, Y, Z, and everyone else just kind of like, okay. And, or they might, you know, argue with that person, but that person's like, no, this is what we need to do.
This is the ultimate solution and kind of steamrolls them to agree.
And even if they don't, even if they're not a steamrolling alpha player, it's still that person has a tendency to say, I see all of the information, this is the solution, and I'm going to point this out, which can make it not as much fun for the people who take a little bit longer or look at games and look at the game in a different way.
Also, you, like sometimes I think that you and me are very different. We come to problems from a different direction.
Right.
And neither one of us is wrong in the way we're seeing things. And we do a very good job of like, this is my argument I'm presenting. I think we should do ZYX. And you go, no, I think we should do XYZ. And then usually we come to a middle and do like
ABC.
YZX, ABC, something completely different. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know if you have, if we're both playing and we're both having that discussion, neither of us in that case are alpha players. Because we're on an equal footing of discussion.
Yeah.
But if either of us are playing with a group where I'm going to throw out and say like, oh, I think we should do ZYX. If everyone else just looks at me and goes, okay, yeah. I don't know that I meant to, but I have become the alpha player.
So
and you can accidentally do it.
Yeah. So
you Christy's quote.
Yeah. So you and I are alpha playing this podcast as Josh just looks on.
Well, I didn't. I sort of didn't do my homework, and I had this one game that you gave me. What was it? Rewordable.
Rewordable.
And we still haven't played it. So my invisible dog ate my homework. So it's kind of my fault as well.
It's all right, Josh. We did a lot of extra homework.
Yes.
For you.
We just had a lot of free time with the long weekend.
You did.
Yeah.
So all right. So Christy's quote. In my opinion, not all alpha-ing is the responsibility of the players anyway. Is the responsibility. Sorry. I am
Let's
terrible at this.
Let's try this again.
All right.
Do you want me
you
to read?
Do it. Yeah, you
okay.
do it.
Okay. In my opinion, not alpha-ing is the responsibility of the players anyway. Not so much game design. We don't blame game design when people are sore winners or losers. We expect everyone to be gracious about it.
Yes. I think this is very, very good advice.
Definitely.
If you're in a group and you're playing a co-op game and you're just like, nope, this is how this goes. And everyone else at the table is just kind of looking blank because there's nothing for them to do. So they go sit and play Moncala in the corner. That is on you. Like, if you know you're an alpha player, you can fix that.
Yeah, I mean, Sydney often calls herself out as an alpha player. And so at least she's aware of that. And she probably does take steps, I think, to mitigate that whenever she plays co-ops.
Yeah, I think she goes the extreme other way. Right. She tries not to alpha game at all. So she'll see what's going there and just kind of like let other people make decisions. But that also makes it not as much fun for her.
Right, yeah.
I think
not playing optimally.
Because she's a non-confrontational alpha player,
yep.
Which is a very interesting combination to watch. Because sometimes I'll just, like, if I'm playing a game with her and I see her, like, sit back and do, like, she's got, like, this move that she does. And I'm like, I know she wants to tell something. And I have to, like, draw, like, or Sydney,
like,
what is it?
She's squirming in her chair.
I know.
And you can see it.
And she, like, puts her hands in her lap, like, in a certain way. Where, like, she's almost, like, sitting on her feelings there. And I'm like, all right, let's draw it out. Tell me what it is. And, you know, like, half the time she's like, so this is what I'm thinking. I'm like, of course that's what we're going to do now. And, you know, like, sometimes the other half of the time it's like, well, let's think about it and like talk it through. And, you know, we usually come to some sort of, you know, agreement somewhere in the middle. But yeah, you have to kind of draw her out. And then there's other people who, you know, Chris, you have to be like, all right, you need to be quiet for a second so we can talk for a minute about this. Because Chris will, like, you know, passionately argue for his view of things, you know. Yeah. And like, it's not that he thinks, I mean, like, he definitely thinks they're the right things to do, but it's, you know, not that he doesn't want to hear other people's ideas. It's just that he's so excited
he's
about
very
his
confident.
Idea.
He's very confident in his ideas. I mean, he not is. Just in co-op games, just in life.
In
just
life.
In life. I mean, you have to be. You have to just know what you want and go for it.
Yeah.
But, and yes, I think that that's important, like the different styles of alpha player and different ways of correcting it. And I don't even know if correcting it is the right way. It's just, I think with co-op games, you need to find the right group. And yes, you all have to be in the same mindset, and the same levels of glasses of wine will also help. Like, and I'm being a little bit facetious there, but it does, that mindset matters. And the energy level of the group, you have to want to be part of that. And also, some people are just quiet. They're fine just occasionally participating in the conversation and just experiencing it with the group.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's interesting as far as the solutions people come up with for the alpha player. My favorite by far, though, is still the hidden traitor. If you can't be certain that everyone is speaking for the interest of the group, then everyone is going to be trying to convince people of their own ideas and their own opinions.
I haven't tried that one yet. I'm really looking forward to playing a hidden traitor game. That should be good.
Yeah, we'll play Battlestar Galactica or Dead of Winter.
Nice.
Both of those are probably like the quintessential hidden traitor games.
Cool.
I want to play Dead of Winter again because Sarah killed me last time, and I'm really still upset about it. And now I want to come. Like, that used to be like a, oh no, I never want to play that game again. But now I'm like, no, I must play that game and do better.
Yeah. Well, there's a number of standalone expansions and stuff for that too. I don't actually own it because every time I played it, I just played it in Sarah's copy. So I'll have to pick up one of the newer expansions and we can play it. Because the hidden traitor, like I said, it really does eliminate the whole, I must be speaking. If I'm speaking on behalf of the group, I could just be the traitor trying to like pull one over on you guys. So now it turns into an actual conversation.
It's really hard when the alpha player is the hidden traitor. Like, it really makes it so you can't trust anything anyone says.
Yeah,
it's
and nuts. Not being able to trust someone in a board game, that's what makes a co-op really worth playing.
Sometimes. So I want to go to a comment from Aaron on Board Game Geek. He says, Pandemic Legacy is probably the greatest co-op, not because of the mechanics per se, but because of the experience. So, Aaron, I want to say, go play Time Stories and let me know. If you've already played it, maybe, I don't know. But Time Stories is filling my Pandemic Legacy hole right now.
Yeah. Yep. And I think, I mean, honestly, you don't really play a co-op for any other reason besides the experience, whether it be the experience with the group or not. And a lot of these co-ops that we're talking about, when we talked about Time Stories, we talked about Deadline, those are story-based co-ops that you keep going through. I could throw Gloomhaven out there. We've talked about it a lot, though. I can throw Arkham Horror the card game out there. I've talked about that before too.
Near and Far
is not a co-op, but it is story.
It is story-driven, though.
Yep. But Arcadia Quest is another one where it feels like it's player versus player, but you're also versus the board.
Yeah.
So it feels like a little co-op.
Sometimes the player versus player campaign games have that same kind of feel as the story-driven co-op games, is that the story-driving factor outweighs the co-op or multiplayer.
Yeah. Well, and the Legendary series, Legendary Encounter, which is a deck building game. We talked about Firefly. There's now Buffy, and I think Buffy just came out this year. Those are full co-ops, but Legendary, the non-encounter versions, are semi-co-ops where you're all trying to hit a certain goal, but there's going to be a winner. So those are a whole other class of games and also a fun experience to go with. So I don't know what our conclusion... I don't think I have a conclusion. I have really enjoyed, over the last year, playing more and more co-ops and some solo, where the first time we did this episode, I was very anti-co-op. That's before we even played Pandemic the first time. That was over almost a year ago. Because it was an early episode that we did it in.
And why do you think that is? I mean, do you think it's like because the people you've played co-op with, the quality of them has got better? Or is the actual game's got better? Is it both?
I think I developed a respect for them that I didn't have before.
Okay.
I always thought of co-op as, well, if I'm playing it with a group, I'll just solve the whole thing and I don't need to play it with the group.
Right.
I like the confrontation. It's not really confrontation, but the discussion that happens.
I like that he's pointed at me. It makes me feel like it's because of me. But that my inability to just sit back and listen to Chris is what makes co-op games fun.
But I like that. I like that the conversation and solving the puzzles together.
We also talked about this a little bit while we were playing Time Stories. Is it has kind of an RPG feel to it where you make memories at the table. You remember the thing that happened and like you can just say the name of the card and everyone goes, oh my gosh, that card or... You know, something happens and we're like,
yeah,
if Kitty had read the whole card, we wouldn't be in this situation.
it's a group experience that, that you're working with together. And you can Hidden Trader games, you know, co-op with Hidden Trader, same thing, sometimes even more because, oh, my God, Josh, if you had not been the traitor, we would have so had it.
Yeah.
So
really fun.
Yeah.
They are definitely more experience. I think it's because there's so much story element to them and they're different every time you play a lot of these newer ones. So we talked about Pandemic versus Pandemic Legacy a lot, but Pandemic, you know, it's the same game every time you play. Pandemic Legacy, there's a story to it. You want to keep going back. You want to solve the next puzzle. You want to be involved in it. And it does bring you further into the game, I think.
Yep. So my favorite games, co-ops, well, maybe not my favorite, but my favorite co-ops with stories that make me want to go back and figure out the next thing as a group so that we can keep playing together.
Yep.
So any other final words? No? All right.
I feel like I could talk about this for another hour and a half.
I know. But... like we could totally keep going
but
on this.
But this is a good, I feel like we've said enough.
Yes. we do have feedback. I want to thank Steve and Christy and Aaron and... Josh and everyone else. I know we didn't get to your feedback because we kept talking too much ourselves.
Sorry.
But visit us at our board game group, Board Game Geek group on Board Game Geek, easily gotten to by tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. Takes you right there. There's a cool conversation going on about this in the thread.
Always check it out. We don't get to, you know, talk nearly enough about what goes on there. Yep. And there's tons of stuff. Yep.
But it informs everything we do here. So check it out and let us know what you think on this. And on that note, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Well, yes. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments and questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to all of our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Michael Smith, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, and Jeremy Fisher. Until next week, when we talk about gaming furniture, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So this podcast is like a co-op thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not the alpha player here.
You totally are.
But I didn't know.